Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
This is Culture Club HTX
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Lisa Holland-Nelson and Siobhana Roberts-Schreiber.
Hello,
I'm Siobhana Roberts-Schreiber, the co-host and executive producer of Culture Club HTX, and also the eighth wonder of the world, and also the parliamentarian, but I don't have to be that this week because...
Baseball. Do I get to be the parliamentarian, too?
No, you don't need to be. The reason we have a parliamentarian is because Lovely is always off task.
Yes,
you,
okay.
Sir, are on task. So, who are you, by the way?
Scott Rozelle. I'm happy to be here again after a 5 months absence. Baseball season was over in September, and it's about to start again. So, here I am. I'm like a bad penny. I keep showing up.
Well... Right. So as y'all know, we talk about baseball boyfriend Scott all the time and how he's always on holiday. He's back for a little bit. But before we get into your spring baseball overview, it's Super Bowl Sunday. So I feel like we have to talk a little bit of shop about the Super Bowl. So what's your predictions? We got the Seattle Seahawks versus the Patriots. What are we thinking, guys?
Well, look, I think it's going to be an interesting game. And there's way too much attention that's paid to the quarterbacks in all football games, but particularly in the Super Bowl. But to me, that's one of the more interesting stories in this Super Bowl.
Mm.
If New England wins, Drake May will be the youngest quarterback to have won a Super Bowl.
Huh.
But the real story to me, if you're a Texans fan, is Sam Darnold. So here's a guy who's on his fourth team, I think. He did pretty well with Minnesota last year, but he ended up with Seattle, where he's had a fabulous year. But 3 years ago, he was seeing ghosts. And the reason he was seeing ghosts, and that's a quote from him, was his offensive line with the Jets was so bad that he was having trouble keeping up with the game, worrying so much about the rush. And those of us who are worried about C.J. Stroud, I think, should look at Arnold as – perhaps an indicator of what could happen if you surround CJ with a considerably better offensive line than he has now. So for this Super Bowl, I'm actually rooting for Seattle because I want Sam Darnold to do well, and I want that to be a precursor of CJ Stroud.
I see where you're going, and you definitely are filling in for Lovely because that's something she would say. Magical, what are you thinking?
I'm curious because this one is one of the more unlikely Super Bowls.
Yeah.
I think it has like the designation of being the most unlikely based off preseason predictions.
Mm-hmm.
I do wonder how Drake May is going to handle that Seattle defense because that Seattle defense is top tier.
Yep.
He has been able to handle a lot of the defenses so far. Texans, Chargers, Broncos, of course, all good defenses. Can he handle that Seattle one? Because that's a different kind of defense that is very good, one of the top tier ones. How can you handle that? Can the Patriots do enough? I have a feeling that the Seattle Seahawks are going to win because I just don't know that the Patriots have enough to keep up with Seattle. Seattle, when they get rolling, they're hard to stop. So that's how I'm feeling.
Interesting. So we have two
Seattles.
Yeah.
And how about you?
You know, I'm kind of going for Drake. So I was at an event this week where R.C. Slocum, is that his name?
Yeah, former Aggie coach.
Yep, and Mack Brown were...
Former UT coach.
Yep, and so Drake played for Mack, right? Or did he play for R.C.?
No.
He played for Mack Brown at North Carolina,
North Carolina,
I think.
Yes, and so he was talking about him, and he was talking about how he's such a competitor. Like, he's super, super, super competitive. And I think he has four brothers or three brothers. And so he's the youngest. So he grew up and he said something like he won a Super Bowl in his backyard before actually going to the Super Bowl. So to see him so I think that some of that competitive nature of being that little brother and getting picked on and being like, damn it, today is the day. I think he's going to show up. I do.
Well, I don't think Drake May is Tom Brady, but we do remember the last time that New England showed up with a quarterback that was unseasoned and what happened there. They upset St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm the outlier here with the two of you gents. I'm going to go for Drake. Yeah, I think the Patriots going to pull it off.
Well, I think part of the reason this game is interesting is because it is such an unlikely game. And
yeah.
Because you have two teams that I'm sure they're not surprised to be there, but I suspect that when they were making reservations for their postseason vacations, they might have planned to be in Hawaii this week or something else. But I think it'll be an interesting game.
I do, too.
I'm looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, we'll watch it and we'll report back. Okay, so Magical, any Rocket news before we get into baseball?
Nothing yet. We're actually, at the time of this, the trade deadline hasn't happened yet.
Yep.
So things are still up in the air. A lot of trades have been happening this week in the NBA. James Harden was on the move. Jaren Jackson Jr.
Is he still playing basketball?
Yes, he is. Hmm. And now for the Cleveland.
This past week?
Yeah, just this past week. Now he's with the Cleveland Cavaliers. A lot of movement kind of going around the league. So at the time that we're doing this, still up in the air for what the Rockets are going to do. But they've been solid so far. I mean, they could always get better, mm-hmm. you know. So, but nothing, I don't want to say too much because I say this, and then by the time we finish our recording, they have traded for, I don't know, somebody yeah. major. So
okay, we're tentative. Okay, we're positive, we're tentative. All right, baseball.
Okay, Shivana, it's February.
Yep.
We've been talking about the Super Bowl, and we talked about the NBA. March Madness is just around
yep.
the corner, which is one of my favorite times of
for
year.
Sure.
But February to me doesn't mean football and it doesn't mean basketball. It means spring training. And believe it or not, the Astros pitchers and catchers report for duty next week.
Oh, wow.
And the first spring training games take place the following week. And, you know, I love
spring. So in February?
In February.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I love spring training. You get to watch veterans honing their skills. You get to see young players trying to get noticed.
Mm-hmm.
The weather's warm out in Florida. It's outdoor baseball.
This is what you do when you're retired. You go to spring training.
You do. And mm-hmm. You've got small, intimate ballparks. And
yes.
the people who go to spring training games are interested in baseball. They're not interested in the spectacle that all professional sports
yes.
have become. They are interested in baseball. And that's one of the things that makes it the most fun for me. And I'm going. I'll be there for four Astros games. And when I go to spring training, and I've done this for probably 15 out of the last 20 years, I look for certain things. This year it's interesting because there are going to be a lot of people missing from Astros spring training that mm. I've gotten used to seeing
mm-hmm.
and appreciating. You know, you got Mauricio Dubon,
yep.
who made such a big impact on that team as a utility player, has been traded. He's gone. Chaz McCormick, who is a fan favorite. Victor Caratini, who I thought was one of the better backup catchers in the league. Framber Valdez, the baby-rocking pitcher, Luis Garcia, and Mustachio J.P. France, you may remember when he came
yes.
out with his child after one of the games. This infant had a little mustache. On him, some players that we were watching that we thought were the Astros' future, Jacob Melton, Pedro Leon, none of them will be there. That's a lot of change.
Yeah, a whole lot.
And, you know, the Astros still have a pretty good team. I think one of the things we forget is last year when they didn't make the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't make the playoffs for the first time since 2016, but they won only one game less than they had won the year before when they did make the playoffs. And there were a lot of injuries last year.
There were.
But, you know, the fact of the matter is the Astros, if they want to be competitive, have to be a better team. That one game doesn't tell the whole story. They have to be a better team than they were last year if they want to be on top of the AL West. And so spring training is going to be part of the answer to the question is, did they really get better?
Yeah, did you improve? What have you been doing in the offseason?
Yeah. So I think they did get better. I mean, they added considerable depth to their pitching staff, most notably the Tatsuya Imai, who's mm-hmm. the pitcher from Japan, the
yes,
best
yes.
Japanese player that was available this past year. So their starting rotation with Imai and Hunter Brown and Christian Javier, and they've got a bunch of depth in their starting rotation this year, which is one of the things they did not have last year,
mm-hmm.
and it showed when they couldn't withstand all of those injuries. So when I go to spring training, I watch for certain players. So in the pitching segment, I'm really going to be watching it, Spencer Arrighetti, who's coming back from an injury.
Yep.
Who looked like he was on a trajectory to become a solid pitcher. I don't think he had become one yet, but he looked like he was on that trajectory, and he's going to be important. So I'll be watching him. In the bullpen, they've got Josh Hader and Brian Abreu coming back. And so anytime you have those two players, your bullpen's going to be top tier. But A.J. Blueball is the guy that I'm going to be watching. He's a guy that...
That's a great name, too.
It is a great name. He's a guy that was both a starter and a reliever last year. I think he'll be in the bullpen. And who's going to be the most fun to watch? Yordan Alvarez. You know, he was out most of last year. And if you don't think Yordan Alvarez made the difference in one game, you're wrong. I mean, just having him back is going to make a huge difference. So, catchers, you've got Yonner Diaz, who's just came out of a favorable arbitration. He's going to be backed up by Cesar Salazar, but the Astros have a rookie, Walter Yannick, who was their number one draft pick 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think he's a guy to watch in spring training this year. But I think the outfield's uncertain. You got a couple of rookies. Well, Cam Smith is no longer a rookie. He was a Rookie of the Year candidate last year and then really dropped off in the second half of the season. So I'm going to be watching him. And then Zach Cole, who got to play just a little bit at the end of last year and hit a home run in his first at bat, the first major league pitch he saw, he hit a home run. And in the limited time that he was on the big league team, he played well both offensively and defensively. So I'll be watching him. Here's the question. Will I be watching Isak Paredes in the outfield? Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's a good question. And that's part of the bigger question.
Mm-hmm.
What are the Astros going to do at first base? I mean, their infield is pretty well set. Correa's going to play third. Pena's going to play short. Altuve, after that experiment in playing left, I think is going to get most of his starts at second base.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Allen becomes the Mauricio Dubon of this year. But first base, there's a dilemma. What are the Astros going to do there? They've got Christian Javier, who is Christian Walker, who was a former Gold Glover. Had a history of being a consistent RBI performer, a really good guy and a good teammate who was a huge disappointment last year. So can he make a comeback? Or how about Isak Paredes? He was the all-star third baseman. Then he got hurt, and then he lost his job to Correa. What are the Astros
going to do with him?
What are they going to do with him? So you got two guys, both of whom are really good, that can play first base. I don't think they're going to keep them both. So one of those two will be traded.
The drama. It's drama.
So spring training this year, I'm going to watch those two guys to see who I think is going to be the one that moves on. But it'll be very interesting this year, and so stay tuned on that one.
Well, and we'll also stay tuned to why he didn't mention what game he was going to take us to during spring training of those four. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to deliberate on that, and we'll be back.
Okay.
At Culture Club HTX, you know we want you to stay fabulous, which is why we've teamed up with Dr. Michael J. Streitman at Westlake Dermatology and Cosmetic Surgery. Dr. Streitman prides himself on delivering the gold standard of care to his clients. He's board certified and performs surgery in the private surgical suite at Westlake, as well as provides non-invasive services like Botox and fillers. If you're ready to receive the gold standard of care, make an appointment with Dr. Streitman today at westlakedermatology.com. And be sure to mention that Culture Club HTX sent you for a special treat.
You're listening to Culture Club HTX
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Now it's time to talk some business with Lisa Holland Nelson and Shavonna Robert Schreiber inside the Huntington Bank Studios.
Hello, I'm Shavonna Robert Schreiber, the co-host, executive producer, and the eighth wonder of the world, co-host of Culture Club HTX. And you're hearing me first because the lovely Lisa Holland Nelson Bowman Lombardi is absent. But in her stead, we have a fantastic co-host, baseball boyfriend Scott. Welcome.
Well, Shavonna, it's great to be with you guys again. It's hard to believe it's been 5 months since baseball season.
Yeah, because you like go on vacation and never come to work. So, yeah. I'm glad that you're back. Are you back?
So I'm ready to go for – this is kind of like spring training for the radio season.
So oh, my God. So, if you were wondering where he was, so baseball boyfriend Scott agreed to be our baseball correspondent, and then he disappeared for multiple months.
Baseball season is over for me when the Astros are no longer in the playoffs.
And then so you disappear.
They exited early this year, and so I was off to do other things.
Okay. Anyway, so he's back, and we're so happy about it, but you're not even the best guest we have today.
Listen, this is going to be a really good show.
So who do we have on?
I'm really happy to introduce our first guest, who's Barbara Marshall. You know, Barbara is someone who's lived an interesting life. She's a Texas girl, but spent times in other places, which I'm sure we'll hear about. Graduated from college in Michigan at Hillsdale College. Started a career in retail. And then she moved over into clinical medical sales, where she spent a number of years, 27 years, I think. And then really did something I think is very interesting, and I think all of you will find it very interesting. She decided to combine her knowledge of consumer marketing, which she picked up in her career, her interest in nutritional science, and her passion for dogs. Now, you might say, well, what do you do with all three of those things? Well, here's what you do. You start a dog food company.
There you go.
And you start a dog food company that produces a product that's very unique. It's been done in collaboration with some of the big research universities in the country, and I'm really interested in hearing what Barbara has to say. The name of her company is Wag Tantrum, and she's the CEO, Barbara Marshall.
Yes, thank you. That's amazing. I've never heard my life sound so great.
Right? This is why we have him here, right?
Yeah, you could come anytime.
You should have him come introduce you.
Yeah, what can I do to just bring you around me every
Warning,
day?
He's always on vacation, so, you know,
well,
good luck
Astros.
With that.
I need the Astros you in need town.
Then yeah. He'll come. So, Barbara, first of all, thank you so much for being here today. We're so excited.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. This
of course.
Is amazing for me.
And as a dog mama over here, I was like, so excited. Okay, so let's talk about the name. I could not wait. I know I could have found this out ahead of time, but I was like, no. I'm sure everyone else wants to know. So Wag Tantrum.
Yeah, it's unusual.
It's great, though.
Yeah, it's unusual. Well, you know, I was trying to have... You know, every company I've ever worked with had a name that was either named after the man who started it or it had something to do with some Latin medical product that nobody understands.
Right.
So I'm like, let's have fun with this because your animal's fun.
Oh, my God. My puppy's crazy.
Yeah.
In the best way.
They're fun.
Yeah.
So we hired a company to kind of help us out, and they came up with all these names. And if your dog likes what they're eating, what do?
Wag and wiggle around.
They wag and they
roll
around. Kind of create a little tantrum.
Yeah.
So
oh, that's so funny.
Tantrum. So create a tantrum when you feed your dog.
Oh, how clever.
Yeah, it's fun.
Super clever. Okay, so Wag Tantrum was born from your desire to rethink what it meant to have for healthy dogs, right? And what does healthy mean as it relates to dogs? So what was the moment? So baseball boyfriend Scott kind of talked about how you decided to open this, but when did you say, okay, this is the problem that I am going to solve for pet owners? Like, when did that come to you?
I was in East Jeff, New Orleans, Louisiana,
what?
Hospital.
Okay. I was like, what? Okay,
in
got it.
In the cath lab with the doctor, we were doing an AFib case. And I was just, I had this amazing dog that I just got at home. And she was sick all the time. Hmm. And I was telling my doctor about it. And he's like, well, you know almost more than anybody. Why don't you just start cooking for him? I'm like, you're right. I could probably fix this problem if I wanted to.
Yeah.
So what I did is, the fortunate thing is, at the time I was working for a medical startup, and I would go around the country, like UCLA, Northwestern, Mayo Clinic. Every single one of these teaching hospitals has an animal lab.
Mm-hmm.
All of them. They just don't have signs this way to the animal lab. So I had the doctors that I worked with, asked them to make me an appointment to talk to the lead vet. So I would go talk to the lead vet, and I would go through all my symptoms. This is what's wrong with my dog. And they're like, it's what you're feeding him. I'm like, no, it's not, because I'm feeding him the best food I possibly can. My vet's telling me what to do. And he's like, every single one of them, like, nope, it all goes back to your food. And I'm like, you're kidding. And they were all adamant about it. And if you think about it, back in the day in the cath lab, so 84 to 92% of a dog has the same genetic makeup as we do.
Mm-hmm.
So if the dog performed well on, you know, cancer drugs, lotions, anything medical, it's going to perform well in a human trial. So you don't waste that money, you know, trying to, you know, use it on rats or mice or whatever. So before they had all the rules, we used dogs to do everything. And I'm like, well, and it stands to reason, if we feed ourselves McDonald's every day, we're not going to grow old and we're not going to grow well.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be miserable. And we all see those people every day in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So just started thinking, well, let's start feeding the dog the way I feed myself. Mm-hmm. If I want to be happy and healthy, let's just start doing it better. And I was told by five physicians that my dog would die before the age of five.
Oh, wow. What kind of dog was this?
It's a boxer.
Oh, I had a boxer, too.
Stage 2 cancer on her ear at 6 months old. She died when she was 11.
Wow.
So I consider that.
You were doing something right.
I did. And it was all in her food. Once I switched her food and I started doing this, literally within 3 months, I had a different dog on my hands.
Right. So then basically it was your own experience with your own dog that prompted you to do it.
Yes.
And so, I mean, tell us what makes Wag Tantrum as a food, dog food, different than just, you know, standard dog food.
Well, there's all different types of dog food out there now. There's, you know, your kibble, and there's all these fresh ingredients. We're the only ones that truly organic. And it's so important for all of us to eat organic. Just because, you know, it's no secret. We're farming out our farms. The soil is depleted of the nutrients. And if we go organic, it's just better for us.
Mm-hmm.
And if we go organic with our dog, we can take out a lot of the pesticides and stuff that you get in regular foods. Dogs pick up pesticides all day long when they go to the park and they walk and then they lick their feet. So they're going to get that with their, you know, so let's fix what we can. And we can fix what they eat. So And the difference is you can truly eat it. It is made in a truly human-grade kitchen, and you can eat it. And the difference is, you know, we source our food where most people shop. I mean, we look for the best deals and the best buys. But every now and then, we're shopping at Costco because they usually have the largest amount of organic food available. So it's truly food you eat.
Hmm.
So, Barbara, you mentioned your materials mentioned human grade ingredients, and so that's what you're talking about. You're talking about food that Shivana and I could go eat ourselves.
Yes, and you should.
And that's interesting because you think about how dogs and people have evolved and how our eating habits have evolved over time. And there's a lot of move, this farm to table movement and other movements to get us to eat more healthy food in a way that perhaps our ancestors. Is that what we're trying to do with dogs, too? Are we trying to get a dog to eat the way a dog
paleo,
ate
basically.
When it was in the 1800s? Or are we just trying to eliminate some of the bad effects of materials that have crept into dog food and our food in the 20th and 21st century?
Yeah, I think...
That was a long question. Did that make
sense? He's an attorney. Y'all know that, though. Keep going.
I think, you know... Dogs a long time ago lived a lot longer than they're living now.
See, I didn't actually know that.
So, you know, it's 80% of all dogs over 10 usually get some type of cancer. The majority of it is fatal. And why is that? Well, it's because we're feeding them processed foods. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing for people as it is for dogs. You know, you can pick up a journal, any medical journal, and read about processed foods for the human.
Right.
It's bad. They're telling us it's bad. And we're actually starting to believe that. There, you know, we can control 95% of our destiny. We can control 95% of the destiny with the dog. 5% we can't control because it's environmental and environmental and genetic.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some things you can't stop. But if you can control 95%, why wouldn't you?
Because you're lazy, I know. Yeah, I mean, that's why.
You don't look lazy.
Well, I'm not lazy. Yeah, I'm not lazy, but that's why, because people are lazy. And so that was one of the questions that I was going to ask you, because I could hear people thinking, just like for themselves, they're like, that sounds like a lot of work, right? I mean, you've made it easy because you have the food that someone can just purchase, and they don't have to do the cooking and the drying and et cetera. But for you, as you were starting this company, how did you balance convenience and quality in the beginning? Because it's not easy to source the right food, make it properly,
It's not easy if you want to do it by yourself. And And as we have a vet that we work with will tell you, you can't get a third chicken, a third of rice, and a third vegetables and just put it together. That's not a balanced meal for a dog. You have to, you know, and protein's the most important ingredient in the food for the animal. You have to have the right amount of protein, you have to have the right amount of vegetables, and you have to have the right amount of carbs, and then you have to add nutrients to it to make it a balanced meal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you can't just do a third and a third, and you have to source these nutrients.
Which is why we're happy that you started Wag Tantrum. Yes. This is what I mean by like the process.
Easier.
Yeah,
it's just like, geez. To let someone like us do it,
mm-hmm.
who we work with vets, we work with vet nutritionists, you know, they're the ones that helped us. And we did a study with dogs before we even started, and we followed their blood work for 7 years before we even came to market.
Oh, wow.
We know for a fact that the food works. We've got 10 dogs that prove it. And I love the people who want to cook for their animal. I think it's great. But unless you're adding the right nutrients and you're doing the right thing, you're not giving a balanced meal.
Mm.
So if you do want to cook for your dog, I highly recommend you get some help. Call a vet nutritionist or ask your vet who you can go to, and they'll develop recipes for you. They're happy to. It does take a lot of work.
So everything goes online these days, and everything is available through AI,
interwebs.
Chat GPT. So if I'm a pet owner and I want to try to do this and I want to cook for my pet and at the same time provide the kind of balanced diet that you're talking about, are there sources that people can go to find that information?
Yes, and you can find balanced meals online. I don't necessarily – it's not that the balanced meal you find online is bad. It just might not be the balanced meal for your dog.
Right.
That's why I really suggest include your vet. I mean, we've done the work. You have to do the work if you want to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And there are different companies that sell the nutrients that you can put in there, but where are their nutrients being sourced from?
Mm.
That's what you want to know. Like, we don't put, you know, we all go to the store now and we can buy vitamins and stuff, and a lot of them are sourced out of China. We don't source anything out of China. You know, all of our vitamins are from the U.S. Everything we do is sourced from the U.S. We know where everything comes from,
mm-hmm.
and we know that if it doesn't pass the test of you being able to eat it, it doesn't go in our food.
So now I've decided that Wag Tantrum is the place to go. I don't want to cook for my dog. I know you've done all the work. But how are you tailoring your product to my beagle?
Well, do you have a beagle, baseball reference?
No, but I was raised with a
beagle. Oh, I was like, well, how did I not know this? I feel cheated.
Your beagle would still be alive. <than Wag Tantrum. laughs>
Fair. Yeah, but that is a great question.
Yeah, like, well, you can go online. You can order our food online, and you would follow our feeding guide. And every dog has a little bit of different feeding guide. And you really got to...
But is it by breed? Do you start by entering the breed?
We do not do...
Or by the size of the dog? What's your starting point?
Our starting point is you get online, and if you need help figuring out what to order, there's a calculator. And it does ask you the breed, the size of dog, neutered, non-neutered.
Age, any kind of health concerns.
And
yeah.
There's a picture. Is your dog too skinny? Is your dog perfect? Is your dog fat? So once you go through all that, the calculator will tell you what you need to feed, and then you order from there.
I can't wait to go and do this for a puppy, Mr. Cornell. He's Mr. now because he's about to be eight, so he's mature.
He's a senior.
I know. He's a little gray. Makes me sad, but that's okay. Because I just
fix that.
Well, I want to know, like, how he's going to live, outlive me. He's like partier, but I can't wait to see what it says, because as I mentioned to you, he's a Frenchie, but he's giant. He was the biggest in his litter. The vet continues to assure me that even at 34 pounds, which is like 14 pounds bigger than most Frenchies, he's healthy. He's not overweight. But so I'm curious, and I'll go online and do the calculator to see what it says.
I've seen his picture.
I mean,
he looks good.
Yeah, he's great.
I wouldn't have said he was eight. That's funny.
I would have said
he was younger.
He acts younger.
Like 4 or 5.
You know what? I think I not made a mistake. So, Cornell, if you hear this, I don't think I made a mistake. But he got a nose job. So he got his nose opened up so he can breathe.
Oh.
And I think that like supercharged him. So now he's
Well, think about it.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, if they can't breathe, they're miserable.
Well, he's definitely not miserable.
Yeah, that's great. That's one of the
hardest
things.
He doesn't snore or any of that. So he has got his nose job. That's what I said. He's going to outlive me. This dog lives a better life than me. But anyway, okay. So you're advocating for all wag tantrum or natural human grade food, not like a mixture of kibble food? Like, what do you think?
Well, I'm advocating that you do what's best for your dog and what's okay. best for you and your budget. I think that's important. If you want to mix your food with the kibble, and lots of people do, I highly suggest you need to go with a high-end kibble. There's no good cheap kibble out there. There's just not.
So
and then there's some high-end. You're not going to save money by using a good kibble, but that still gives you the option. I mean,
sure
if you're,
won't.
If you, yeah, if
you, I know.
If you're buying a cheap kibble, you think about this. Are you going to feed your kids Happy Meals every day? That's basically the equivalent of a cheap kibble.
So here's the other thing, and I used to have three dogs, and yeah, I know it's a whole thing. Anyway, one of them was a Bull Mastiff, and they are all eating. He was the best, Teague, my Teague. Anyway, eating prescription grade, basically super clean, nothing in it, kibble. Mm-hmm. It's super expensive, and he would eat 6 cups a day.
Yeah, it's expensive.
So, I mean, it would add up, but now just down to one doggy. But it's not cheap. So, to your point.
Yeah, it's not cheap.
No. And so, as a person is thinking about this, and maybe they say, you know what, maybe I don't want to go all human grade, but I want to mix. You're saying that could be okay so they can figure out what's happening with their dog.
You can definitely mix. And one of the things I encourage, if you can mix... Mix it with the stuff you have at home. If you have a really good fresh food, you know, if you're grilling a chicken breast, if you have broccoli, if you have carrots, if you have blueberries, strawberries, there's a lot of stuff in your kitchen you can put on the dog's food to get them to have the full meal. Mm-hmm. You just want to make sure they're getting enough of kibble or whatever you're feeding them to give them the nutrition they need. And you can help. And especially if you're doing a kibble, I highly recommend you add a fresh protein.
So my puppy, because he's high maintenance, like if... Like, he doesn't like vegetables if they don't have, like, a little bit of salt on them. He's like, like, literally, I'm like, you are a mess. A green bean just plain, he's like, not interested.
Sounds like an East Texas
friend. I mean, right? He's definitely from East Texas. But it's just so funny, because I'm like, why don't you just eat this? And he's like, and you put a little bit of, he's like, okay, I'll eat that.
So my dog was our first taster, and she was a boxer, and you know how they can hold things in their jaws?
Yes.
She would eat, and what she didn't like, she would put in her jaws and spit it out when she was done. So then I got
like a sauce or something?
No, I got a food processor.
Ah.
And those carrots are so small, you can pick them out if you tried.
Oh, okay. So smart mom.
Yeah, so I just do that. That's what our food does. It's mixed up. The only one you can actually really see some stuff in there is our recipe for quinoa. We do put the blueberries in whole.
Oh.
So we don't chop them.
So now, Barbara, just to be sure, I could actually eat this dog food.
I promise you can.
I'm one of these people. I will like taste it
too. You can see me eating it on my Instagram.
Okay, so speaking of, how do people find you and how do they find out more about Wag Tantrum? Where can they buy it, et cetera?
You can buy it online at wagtantrum.com. And I encourage any and everybody to call me or email me if they want to talk about it. And Three Dog Bakery here in town.
Oh, excellent.
It. Yeah.
And they have multiple locations too, don't they?
Yeah, there's one in the Heights and one in West U.
And then you also told me that it can go in your freezer for up to a year. So,
yes.
So you can buy it and like, you know,
store
it.
Well, we'll ship it right to your door. But we ask that you buy X amount because shipping is just outrageous now. But it will stay in your freezer up to a year and 10 days in the refrigerator.
So worst case scenario, we have some sort of like weather event. You can eat it. You and your dog will have food.
Exactly.
No, that's actually. Yeah.
So
hey, it can happen.
You know, and if you lose electricity and you don't have ice, red wine goes good with this food.
No, baseball breakfast got perks up. He's like, say more. Wait a minute.
You don't have to have ice for red wine.
Ah.
So, Barbara, what's the cost differential between your product?
I'm glad you asked because I was waiting.
You compared to what you were calling the high-end kibble.
It's neck and neck. It's, you know, high-end kibble is just as expensive. And, you know, it's really not that expensive if you think about it. If you go online and you look for 16 ounces, you cannot reproduce a meal for that in your home, an organic meal for yourself. Mm-hmm. For what we charge, you can't do it, and you can't do it for your dog for that price, and especially your time. So, you know, our food is not, It's not overly expensive. And it, as far as the high-end kibble goes, we're the same.
Well, and here's the other thing to that point. I do feel like pet parents, well, first of all, these pets, man, they live the life. And I feel like, because I've grown up with dogs, and Baseball Boyfriend Scott, I know you did too, and your doggy probably lived outside.
He did.
My dogs, you know, as a kid, they lived out. They didn't live in the house. They lived outside. Now all the dogs live in the house. So
we live outside.
Right. But it's just so interesting, right? Because it's changed.
It's changed.
And I do think people are much more mindful of, I mean, their pets are like their kids. If you don't have any kids.
Yeah, they become a huge part of the family. And I get that. I grew up with dogs, and our dog did come first.
Yeah.
You know, the dog didn't talk back to my mom.
Well, you know what else is interesting? Growing up, even though the dogs lived out, my dogs lived outside, they ate more of human food. Like, you know, the scraps of meat or vegetables.
Yeah.
They ate more human food than, you know, now that you really think about it.
In the beginning, you know, all dog food came in a can, and then World War II came, and we needed the metal for the war.
Is that what happened?
So that's when we got into kibble.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So, I mean, dog food used to be
better.
And it was made usually by, you know, your local butchers and stuff who had extra food hanging out, and they would make it and they would sell it. And then that all went away. And then when we were growing up, you know, Alpo was really big. Mm. But, you know, my mom there was always people food on my mom's dogs. Always. It was whatever we were eating.
Yeah.
The dog had something on it.
Of course.
And you know, we just didn't see the health problems we're seeing today.
That's
when they
true.
Did that.
None of, like, my dogs just died. They were old, not because they had any,
and
like.
What a nice thing.
Yeah.
You know, now we've got, you know, there's eye doctors, there's oncologists, there's dermatologists.
There's only so far I'm going to go, though.
There's psychologists and psych for your dogs.
You know what, my dog trainer, I do have, okay, so the last thing, and then we want to tell people where they can find you again. So all of my dogs that, as an adult, have been professionally trained, same trainer. And she always says, you have to train the human. You're training the human, not the dog.
Oh, absolutely.
So the psychologist, the humans need to go.
The
pets are fine.
If your pet is misbehaving or doing something wrong, it's all you.
This is me staring at people on the elevator with bad pets. I'm like,
you know,
it's
my,
you.
My dog tells everybody it took a long time to train me. But I finally got there.
Okay, so one more time. How can people find you? This has been
so
fun.
Wagtantrum.com online. And if you can't remember that, type in organic human grade food delivered to your door, and Wagtantrum will pop up.
Oh, look at you, SEO. That's great. Yeah. Okay, and so the website, wagtantrum.com, you said on Instagram, is it Wagtantrum also?
Wagtantrum.com.
Instagram, Facebook, all that.
Yeah.
And your email?
My email is Barbara@wagtantrum.com.
There you go.
So if you have questions, please email me. I love to hear from people. I'll answer any question. It doesn't have to be about my food. You can email me about another food. There's not everybody is the perfect wag tantrum dog, and I understand that. There's something out there for everybody. Let's just focus and make our dogs better.
Well, I love that. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Oh,
and
I'll let you know.
Yeah, I'll let you know what Cornell has to say. Mr. Cornell has to say about the food. I'll take a picture and send it to you.
Yeah.
He's such a mess. All right. Well, with that, we'll take a break. We'll be back.
Who let the dogs out?
Are you a business owner and looking for a fun and low-cost way to advertise? Yes? Super! You should join our Culture Club HTX crew. Visit us at cultureclubhtx.com and click on Culture Club HTX crew, or send us an email at connect@cultureclubhtx. You'll be happy you did.
It's Culture Club HTX
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Lisa Holland-Nelson and Siobhana Roberts-Schreiber.
And we're back. I'm Siobhana Roberts-Schreiber, the co-host and executive producer of Culture Club HTX and also the eighth wonder of the world. Here, not with Lovely today, but with Baseball Boyfriend Scott.
Always glad to be here with you, Siobhana.
I'm so happy that you're back. This is super excited. And most importantly, we have a guest. Who do we have on?
Well, we're really fortunate to have back again with the show Mark Folks, who is the CEO of the Hobby Center, and who's been a Houstonian for 17 years. And we were just talking about the fact that he's originally from Newfoundland, and I was asking him if he could show me how to do the Newfie dance, and he disclaimed any knowledge of that dance. But we're gonna.
Well, because I want to learn how to do it
there
too.
There are so many Newfoundland traditions. I don't really know the Newfie dance yet, so I'm gonna have to do my own.
Well,
research.
It may be that you'll find out that I made that up. I actually don't think I did. I'm pretty sure
that's East Texas.
That
I'm gonna look it up.
Actually, in a bar in Newfoundland and saw that perform. Now, whether the performer meant to perform a specific dance, I don't know.
Did you have a shot of Screech?
Beforehand? I did have a shot of Screech.
What okay.
But
Screech?
I'm pretty sure I only had. Well, can you go to Newfoundland without having a shot?
No,
of Screech?
It's mandatory. It's absolutely.
What's Screech?
In fact, I think
it is a Jamaican rum. That Newfoundland ultimately used to trade with Jamaica for codfish, which was historically the primary industry, and it became really the drink of the province. And so certainly now when we have what we call a come from away, a CFA come and visit us in Newfoundland, then they must consume the Screech.
And, you know, Screech was a big product in Newfoundland during the trading days because the ships used that for their sailors, and it was part of the way.
Of course they did.
Well, it was not only for entertainment and the way we drink alcohol these days. It had medicinal value.
That's why I
drink
alcohol, is for medicinal value. Right. Yeah, I mean, seriously.
Me too.
Yeah, all of us. Okay, so that is, okay, we're going to talk about that on the break. But what we're here to talk about today is all of the exciting things that are happening in your upcoming season. I mean, like, I can hardly contain myself.
It's really one of the better
lineups I've seen. Yeah.
You know, I'm biased, but it is an incredible season. We just announced it this week. Yesterday went public. 26-27 Memorial Hermann Broadway at the Hobby Center season. We have 10 productions that we'll introduce to Houstonians in the next season. 6 of those are premieres, and the other 4 are return engagements or just well-loved revivals that Houston audiences always love.
Yeah, tell us which ones are which.
You know, we are opening the season with an audience favorite, and that is falling into that revival category, and it is The Sound of Music.
One of my all-time favorites.
I am sure that, you know, mostly everybody has seen
it. Can we do the Newfie dance to The Sound of Music?
It's already started. We've got it happening
I looked it up, too. I'm going to look at the YouTube. I did. I found it.
But this is a production that's directed by Jack O'Brien. He's a 3-time Tony Award winner, perhaps best known for Hairspray. This is such a beloved show. And we're excited for this retelling in Seraphim Hall that will open our 26-27
season. Does it have any sort of unusual twist, or does it follow the traditional staging and production of a show
That's
like that?
That's such a great question. People are always on edge and wondering if it's going to be, you know, a remix. New contemporary production that is set in a different place and time. This is a traditional Sound of Music that audiences are going to love.
What do you see when you have these traditional shows at the Hobby Center? What do you find your audience looks like? Is it people my age who grew up watching The Sound of Music and bringing their kids and grandkids, or do you have a younger audience that enjoy seeing these older productions?
You know, honestly, you might sit back and think, okay, specific audiences are going to be attracted to certain shows. Maybe The Sound of Music will attract a largely older audience who grew up with this. But that's not really the case. And I invite you to come and see it in next fall, because you'll see actually that so many of our productions have become a part of different audiences' traditions for various reasons. And so it is really a very diverse audience. And not probably what you would expect for traditional Sound of Music.
I really wouldn't have known what to expect. I'm not surprised that a show like that would continue to wear well or play well to all ages, different times. But I wasn't sure that would be the case.
Well, so then let's not, well, we can tell you, you have to dress up and be in character if you come to the show.
That's what
we do there. We all dress up like the show, Baseball Orphan Scott. Right. So.
If you come and have dinner before the show at Diana, which we highly recommend if you can get a reservation, it's the most coveted in town. But ultimately, you can sit there before a performance and just look around and see. There are always tables full of costumes.
Yes.
Whatever the theme of the show is. I think the wildest is usually Mamma Mia. Because then we're getting a lot of really exciting attire, boas.
That's one way to say it. So what else is coming this
So Aww. After Sound of Music, our next production in the season is Buena Vista Social Club, really bringing the Grammy Award-winning album to life. This is one of my absolute favorites from the season. It really expands the idea of what musical theater is. Mm-hmm. In this case, the band, the instrumentalists are all on stage. One of the powerful impacts of theater is that it can transport you to a totally different place and time. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly what Buena Vista Social Club does. And so we all get to be sitting in Havana together for this. Really...
He's ready for that. He has those shirts. What are those shirts called that you wear?
Guayaberas.
Guayaberas. He has a bunch of those. That's his thing.
Okay. Well, especially this time of year with some of the weather we've been having in Houston.
That's his jam.
Lovely to be thinking about being in Havana together.
All right, cool. So one thing I want to double click on, you talked about musical theater, and that is the benefit that we have for having you be the president and CEO, because that you have a background in musical theater, don't you?
I do. That really has always been a personal passion of mine. I grew up at one point in my life thinking that I was going to be on the other side of this on stage, as so many of my peers in arts administration really start with that focus, but very quickly learned that was not the right choice for me. And I think I built a stronger career on the administrative side than I ever could have on stage. But it remains what drives me every single day, is sitting in that house as the lights go down, the curtain goes up, and being transported.
Do you get nervous a little bit?
I am definitely holding some level of anxiousness that everything goes as the cast and crew is hoping, as our team is hoping. Mm-hmm. I definitely hold a sense of responsibility.
Yeah.
And so when I'm seeing a production at the Hobby Center, that's ever present for me.
Yeah.
So Mark, do you ever get to have a cameo in any of these productions?
Thankfully, no.
You know, I have Taylor Sheridan.
That would actually be
fun. Taylor Sheridan always finds a way to show up in one of his series.
That actually would be character.
Fun. I wonder if you want to.
I'll invite both of you to come and do that.
Hey, you know I will.
And I will be sitting in the audience with that slight bit of anxiousness, looking to see how that moment.
You know
plays out on
I
stage.
Will. I would be ready to rock and roll. I'm like, whatever.
So I looked at your setup here. You've got productions about a witch, a demon, a sorcerer, two cursed women. I mean, this is an interesting setup that you've got here. Was that were you aiming at a particular feel for this season, or did that just work out that way?
You know, I would say that we don't necessarily approach it thematically in the way that you might think based on how some of these pieces are connecting. The brand of the Broadway series is latest and greatest from New York. So we are striving to pull the productions that have been acclaimed for the highest quality of storytelling to bring them to Houston audiences. So that's our primary driver. And then when we're doing that, we're trying to also create balance. I personally love the hottest, newest thing. That's what gets me
the
really
latest,
excited.
Freshest, as the kids say.
Latest, freshest. I love that. That's what really gets me excited. But I know for every one of me that's out there in the audience, there's somebody that wants to sit down and return to a favorite, like Sound of Music. And so it's really important that we balance. And frankly, I've been doing this work now just for 4 years at the Hobby Center, and that's been one of the most important lessons that I've learned. You have to be able to take yourself out of that equation and think about what your audiences are looking for. And so we just strive to create balance. We strive to make sure that there's a production that's going to appeal to families. So it's appropriate for all ages. And next season we have Boop, the musical.
Yes.
Which is it is the classical musical theater on stage. Jerry Mitchell, the choreographer and director, well acclaimed in the Broadway community, has created joy through this production, bringing Betty Boop to life on stage.
We definitely have to dress
full
up for
color,
that.
Full choreography, lots of costume opportunities.
Baseball boyfriend Scott, you ready for that?
I'm a big fan of Betty Boop, so
You are. Yeah, we got to dress up for that.
Now you talk about classics. Jersey Boys seems like a classic.
Yeah, it does,
I don't know
actually.
How long it's been around, but 20 years.
Only 20 years.
20 years.
Why does it feel longer? It feels like it's been
because
a little longer.
Because we've all seen it so many times.
20 times.
We've watched the movie
yeah.
many times.
Huh. That was the music of my college days. So,
it feels like it's been around longer, but only 20 years.
And for so many audiences next season, they'll probably walk away from the Hobby Center after seeing the full season and say their favorite show was Jersey Boys.
You think?
There is something magical about reliving a show that you've seen many times before.
Yes.
Because you remember all the times that you were there with your friends or family and you dressed up or you went out for dinner beforehand. I know I've seen Mamma Mia over 14 times now.
Wow.
And it still remains one of my favorite shows, and I love revisiting it every time.
Do you sing along?
Part of that.
I thankfully have not been kicked out of a theater for singing along like just recently happened in New York.
Okay. Part of that, though, I think, is most musicals, if they are not of the type like Jersey Boys or Mamma Mia, contain different numbers, different songs that may or may not appeal to a particular person. But if you go see Mamma Mia, you know you're going to hear ABBA songs.
Yep.
You're looking forward to that. If you're going to go see the Jersey Boys, you're going to be listening to Frankie Valli. You do some of these things, and you know you're familiar with all the songs before you ever walk in the door.
Yes.
So they feel familiar to you, and they feel good to listen to. Whereas the others, you have to get used to them a little bit and try to decide whether you like them in that context or not.
It's always one of the markers of whether a production has been successful or not. As a new musical, if it's all original composition, do you walk away thinking about any of those songs?
Or singing them in your car, or finding the soundtrack to listen to it. Yeah, that is actually a good. I know what y'all should do. You should tell people after seeing Jersey Boys or any of these that we're talking about, if they are singing in their car to the soundtrack, to record themselves and send it to you, and you'll put it on your socials.
I love that.
Hello, brilliant. I got good ideas, folks. No, right?
Yes, absolutely.
People would do that.
It's a spectacular idea.
Yeah, like if you're singing along, like Lovely, this is for you because she's like this. She'll sing along. Well, then tape yourself and send it in, and then you'll put it on your socials.
Well, we have a production next season that we might need to start that tradition for.
Which is?
It is Alicia Keys' Hell's Kitchen.
Ah.
Which is
Magical did his eyebrows like this.
It's not supposed to have favorites, but it is personally one of the shows that excites me most. I've had the opportunity to see this in New York now a few times.
Can we go with you to New York?
Please.
Anytime. How do we make that happen?
I'll send you dates.
Okay.
But ultimately, it's interesting. You talk about music that audiences know, and this certainly uses this incredible songbook from Alicia Keys, but many of the songs have been recreated. And so she's using a completely different tempo than the original that was recorded and that audiences know. So you get to experience songs that feel familiar, but they feel completely fresh and new, which is different than a Mamma Mia or Jersey Boys that intentionally recreates the song in that moment. And it's such a great show. I invite you to see it.
So, Mark, we've mentioned some of the thematic ways that I was looking at the series, but we actually didn't tell the audience the names of those shows. So when I was talking about the demons and everything, we had Wicked, we had Beetlejuice, we have Death Becomes Her. Talk a little bit about that group of shows, too.
Well, you know, you may have just opened with a show that I think most audiences are probably not familiar with, and that's Wicked. Right? They're really just catching on.
I mean,
to
nobody's
show.
Ever heard of it.
Another nobody's show that has celebrated actually now over 20 years.
Well, that's impossible to believe. I remember when that show first came out, and I'm glad you didn't ask me how long ago that was. I wouldn't have gotten anywhere close to 20 years.
Yeah.
It has been alive and thriving, and certainly now with the movies over the past couple of years.
I saw it for the first time in London, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. And that was probably 18 years ago.
And those productions are still running in New York. This production is still running, and it's having an incredible life on the road. And we're really excited to have 5 weeks of Wicked in the summer of 2027.
5 weeks?
5 weeks
Are
of
you
Wicked.
Ready?
And you know what?
Are you
we're
your
talking
face
about
green?
Costumes.
Yeah.
We will see a lot of green boas during Wicked.
I'm sure that's
which
right.
is interesting.
That
because
is
there's not really boas featured in the
people just making
but
stuff
people
up.
People are showing up in green boas. I see them getting out of the cars.
Better than painting their faces green.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to do it. Yeah.
That's true. And then
a bow is easier.
Another.
And I bet 5 weeks of Wicked, I bet you'll sell out most of those productions.
I think all of these will sell out. All the ones we've talked about so far, that's another thing. It's super important, as we've learned, to get your tickets now.
This is one of the reasons that we were able to secure the very best from New York, and it's because our audiences in Houston are incredibly enthusiastic about Broadway. Mostly every show as a part of the Broadway series is sold at capacity, and so you do need to plan early.
Yes.
It's a good reminder. Thank you for sharing that.
Okay, so Death Becomes Her, one
Death
of my favorites.
Death Becomes Her, obviously an iconic film that we all love. This is the show, as you know, folks often ask me, knowing that I'm in New York seeing a lot of theater, what should I go see when I'm traveling to New York? And I've been consistently telling them for the past year, go and see Death Becomes Her, because you will laugh from start to
it's so
end
funny.
Of this show.
Yeah.
So funny. We all know the iconic stair fall from the movie.
Yep.
They have created the most spectacular scene live on stage.
Really?
To replicate that. The whole production is outstanding. It has a remarkable score. It is a tour de force for these two leading ladies. Really, really exciting production.
Awesome. Okay. And so then in the what did you say, demons and goblins theme. So you have Harry Potter.
Oh, just this little property called Harry Potter.
Yeah, how'd you, I mean, you're like the man with the plan. How'd you get this?
This show came to life several years ago, pre-2020, opened in London and then subsequently in New York. And it is just now that audiences on the road across the country are getting the opportunity to experience Harry Potter in their hometowns. And so we're at the top of this tour and just very excited about it. This is all about theatrical magic. We talk about how you expand the idea of theater, and this show does it by using so much spectacle to really bring audiences in along that journey that we all know is at its core about wizardry and magic.
And magic. You know, and that's another thing I like about theater, and especially at the Hobby Center, is, you know, the world is the world, but then you come into this building and you sit in this seat and you are transported, and I feel like the possibilities open up. The creativity is sparked just from seeing other creatives do their thing. And so a show like Harry Potter, you think, okay, that really ups the ante, right?
It is impossible not to leave inspired, like seeing creativity at this scale.
Yes.
That's what's so special about the Broadway series, right? These productions are huge. They come to us in many 18-wheeler trucks that are driving from city to city, and they're able to build the show and the set of 8 hours to be able to.
I was going to say, how long does it take for them to build the show?
It varies by show and the complexity, but that could be anywhere from an 8-hour workday to at most about 2 days.
So how many people? I mean, they must have a lot of people. It's like an army.
Involve up to about 200 people.
200
Talk a little
people?
Bit about that, Mark. Wow. The reason I asked that question is my grandson is getting ready to be the prop manager for his high school play next Saturday. And so tell us a little bit about behind the scenes on a production like this, particularly one like Harry Potter that requires a lot of stage management. What's that like?
There is an incredible team that is supporting the few actors that you're seeing on stage. And that team behind the scenes is much larger, multiples of the number of people that will be on stage in performance roles. And that involves certainly costume department, hair and makeup department. It includes scenery department, lighting department, audio department. And if you have a young person in your life who is working in technical theater production, I would encourage them to continue to study that and don't ever get interested in the work that happens on the other side of that equation, because there are far less people looking to become costume designers or hair and makeup artists or lighting designers than there are looking to be actors. So it's a great field and you can build a really exciting career. We have incredible crew people that manage all of the technical components of theater and touring Broadway, and it's amazing work.
You know what I just thought about?
People coming into that field.
And if Broadway, if you get tired of that and you want to retire, then you can go be like a Christmas decor for people. Say, could you imagine if the person who did your Christmas decor at your house was someone who had a theater background? Like, do you remember the Griswolds? Remember that movie?
Absolutely.
I mean, you would win. I was just sitting thinking, ooh, and then they could come. I'm like, could you imagine?
Yes.
I could like see it in my mind. You're right, though.
We should call up some of these folks for the next holiday season.
Yeah.
We'll get access to,
we're going to do it at Baseball Boyfriend Scott's house.
Okay.
It works the other way. Works the other way, too. My grandson, after working on stage management and on props and scenery, now wants to be an architect.
Oh, well, yeah, there's that,
incredible.
Too. There's that.
You know, theater is an incredible training ground for so many important skills in life.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to work together, the ability
yes.
to meet deadlines, to move according to plan, to troubleshoot. There are lots of professionals who've been successful across kind of the spectrum of business who have backgrounds in theater.
So I took theater in college, freshman year. Never thought I was going to be on the performance side. Always was going to be on the administrative side. But the production that we had to work on was Grand Hotel in our class. Like, so we go and we learn all the nuts and bolts, and then this production is happening at the university and we get to work on it. It was fun and it was a mess, but it was fun. Like, you're right, you do, because it's happening right now. So you have to be able to adapt and be extemporaneous and just go. So it definitely teaches, and how to be calm under pressure.
There is no deadline extension.
No.
And there are so few things in life.
There's no email recall, which didn't work anyway.
That's, you know, the whole idea that the show must go on.
Yes.
Is rooted in the fact that you have a hard deadline. And so if now, you have not completed the work, you've got to figure out the best way to maneuver through
that. We had people safety pinned together.
Absolutely. Some,
you know, like it was just because we're students and we were probably hungover. Who knows? But it was great. No, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought about that in a long time.
It's we are just obviously huge advocates for theater education and theater participation for young people for that reason.
So then what else? So tell us what else. I feel like there are a few more.
Beetlejuice.
Well, Beetlejuice is a return engagement. We just had it in Houston a few years ago. It was a huge success for us. Lots of positive audience feedback and requests to bring it back. And so we're doing exactly that. It's what we call a special, an option, meaning that subscribers have the opportunity to add it to their package if they want to revisit it or share those tickets with friends. And then we also have The Notebook, which we haven't touched on, again, based on a popular, iconic movie. And this is a story all about love, perhaps of all of the shows in our season. This
the
is
only one about love.
Most emotional punch that really...
Are we going to cry? Should we not wear eyeliner? Is that what you're telling us?
You will likely be crying.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Many audiences were doing that in New York, and I'm confident we'll be doing it here in Houston as well.
Okay, so how do people go and snap up these tickets? Because like we said, they will sell out. So where do they need to go? How do they get the 411?
You know, thehobbycenter.org is one pathway. You can also go to houston.broadway.com and ultimately get access to subscribe now. Because that is truly the best way to secure your seats and, frankly, one of the only ways.
Right. So don't email you, basically.
Please don't email me. Although if you do, I will get you connected. I will make sure that you get your seats.
Speaking of people, just one thing. You have a new person on your team that I know. So who... Tell us about the new things that are happening.
We are continuing to expand our team as we build on our strategic plan that we introduced a few years ago, have introduced so much more artistic programming and education work. Because of that, we have many more stories to tell, which is exciting. And so we just this week invited Joel Lukes to join us as marketing and communications director.
So Joel, we're watching, but you better tell good stories or else. But yeah,
he is already having a very positive impact, and so excited how Joel gets to come and join the team that's been growing in recent years and really help ensure that the Hobby Center can serve as the greatest conduit for positive impact in the arts in Houston as possible.
That's so you're really good. You should be the president and CEO.
You know,
you're great.
I'll submit my name.
Submit your name. Well, thank you as always for joining us. It's been fantastic. We cannot wait to come dressed up. Because he agreed on air.
And Mark, we managed to maneuver through your entire season, but just for our listeners, walk us through just title in order. I know it runs from September of 26 through June of 27, just to make sure people know exactly what's in store for them there at the Hobby Center.
We are opening with The Sound of Music, and then we move into Beetlejuice, followed by Buena Vista Social Club. Then we have The Notebook, followed by Boop, the musical.
Boop,
then
boop.
We go into Alicia Keys' Hell's Kitchen. Followed on the heels of that, Death Becomes Her. Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Then we have Wicked. And then we close the season with Jersey Boys.
That's a great season. That really is a great lineup. Well, folks, you know where to go. Hobbycenter.org or...
Houston.Broadway.com.
Well... We have come to the end of the road. Can you believe it?
It's hard to believe, but what a great show that was.
How much fun has this been?
It's been a lot of fun.
Are you going to replace Lovely?
I don't think anyone could replace Lisa, but I'm delighted that you asked me to sit in and help today. It was a lot of fun.
Great. So what do we want people to do? Do you know our closing? Remember, we've gone through this.
We've gone through it several times, and the times that I've been on here, I've never been able to get it right. So I've worked very hard to get it right. So we want people to be bold.
Elegant.
Focused,
fit,
and fabulous.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, have a happy Super Bowl Sunday, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
See ya.
At
Culture Club HTX, you know we want you to stay fabulous, which is why we've teamed up with Dr. Michael J. Streitman at Westlake Dermatology and Cosmetic Surgery. Dr. Streitman prides himself on delivering the gold standard of care to his clients. He's board certified and performs surgery in the private surgical suite at Westlake, as well as provides non-invasive services like Botox and fillers. If you're ready to receive the gold standard of care, make an appointment with Dr. Streitman today at WestlakeDermatology.com. And be sure to mention that Culture Club HTX sent you for a special treat.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, sweetie, your mother showed me this Carvana thing for selling the car. I'm going to give it a try. Wish me luck. Me again. I put in the license plate. It gave me an offer. Unbelievable. Okay, I accepted the offer. They're picking it up Tuesday from the driveway. I haven't even left my chair. It's done. The car is gone. I'm holding a check. Anyway, Carvana, give it a whirl. Love ya.
So good, you'll want to leave a voicemail about it. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.